Well, 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 welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Phil Smith. Tony is away today, so I'm being joined by our head of coaching, Cam. Awesome to have you back on the podcast, man.
Thanks, Philippe. Good to be here.
Yeah, awesome to hang out. What are we talking about today?
Oh, man, there's lots going on in the economic landscape at the moment. Wanted to talk about it. Wanted to make sure that you're informed on the implications of it. I think that's really important. And most importantly, what you can do about it and what you have to be doing about it to make sure that you come out on top.
Yeah, man. I think like this really reminds me of, do you remember Kevin Bigger? He was a guest speaker we had at one of our client events a while back. He's an explorer, an adventurer, and he did this like massive ocean race in a rowboat. And it was a pretty incredible story. And he's in this race and he's rowing and rowing. And, you know, this is like we're talking like sort of a month at sea in a rowboat on your own racing against a bunch of other weapons, and while he's doing this he encounters this big storm, right? Like there was this massive storm one night. It's blowing a gale, he's getting thrown around in this little tiny boat, and you know, most people are freaking out and they're thinking, hey, what are we going to do to get through this storm? Better batten down the hatches, throw out the sea anchor and just sort of chill for the night and we can recover in the morning. And I remember Kevin talking about how he phoned his team and he said, hey guys, I'm thinking of throwing out the sea anchor and you know, just riding this one out. And they said, well, you know, Kevin, you could do that, but we've heard from some of the other teams and they're also throwing out their sea anchors. And what if you just kept going? What if you just rode through the night and see if you can get a bit of a lead on the competition? And he said, you know what, let's do it. So dude rows all night, like absolutely battling. Storm is raging. He's getting thrown around. He's just absolutely killing himself rowing through the night. Sun rises in the morning. Sky starts to clear and he's thinking, you know what, like surely I've gotten somewhere with this. Like I've really battled. I've put my heart and soul into, you know, riding through this storm. So he calls his team and he says, guys, how far did I get? And they said, Kevin, you went backwards 10 kilometers. Oh, and he's crushed, right? He's like, what? Like, I've battled and battled. They go, no, Kevin, hold on. Everyone else went back 50. And he's like, wow, hang on. So I've what? And they're like, yeah, you've got a 40K lead on the rest of the group now because you rode all night. So you went backwards a bit, dude, but you've actually got this huge lead. And he actually went on to win that race. And guess how far he won by? 40 kilometers. Eesh. Exactly the lead he gained on that night. So I think the reason this is an important story and why it comes to mind right now is because with a lot going on in the world, economic pressures, you know, pretty substantial war, you know, there's a lot of difficulty in trades businesses, and there'll be a lot of trades business owners out there who are going to throw out that metaphorical sea anchor. They'll batten down the hatches and just try to ride it out. And unfortunately, the way that that's going to look is workflow will get difficult, getting paid will get difficult, margins will be eroded for them, and you know, they're probably going to end up cutting their team back, letting some people go, getting rid of some infrastructure, some overhead, and then you know, the skies will clear. We will get through this, and when we do, those people are going to be a long way back. Yeah. But you know, if we can work really hard and pull some critical levers during this time, we might not necessarily get a huge amount of growth. We might not necessarily boom ahead. We might, but we might not. We might just stay where we are. Although doing that when everyone else is battening down the hatches is going to put you a long way ahead of the competition. And so on the other hand, it might not even be that bad. And in which case, pulling these levers is actually just going to boom your business anyway. So absolutely, you really can't lose when you go hard during tough times. And I think that's what this webinar is all about today, is working hard during those tough times, pulling the right levers and making sure that, you know, we can't lose. That's the idea. So,
totally.
Yeah.
Good, man.
I think a few problems, though, if we don't know how to do that, right?
Yeah, look, you covered a few of them just as you were going through that. But I think the first one and one of the most important is if you don't do anything about this, you're going to have eroding margins. Like the reality is, and everyone listening is kind of knowing this about fuel, right? It's gone up at least 40% pretty much everywhere. Like if you're listening to this, it would have gone up about that or more. Material costs are going up as well. And some of that's because fuel is freight and getting things around. Fuel is running your machines. Fuel is moving your vans around and getting the guys to jobs and everything. It's across it all. But then oil is producing plastics. So it's affecting so many materials in trades businesses. And doesn't matter if you're in civil, if you're a plumber, if you're an electrician. Like if you don't do anything about this, you will just start eating it. And likelihood is you won't be making anything, if much, on your jobs, right?
Well, the cost of everything's going up, right? I mean, yeah. If you look at it on top of that, if you look at what else goes through the Strait of Hormuz, you got, I mean, helium, like yeah. 20 to 30% of the world's helium goes through the Strait of Hormuz, which is critical in the, you know, production of semiconductors. Electronics are getting more expensive. Yeah, I mean, man. If you look at like, you know, fertilizer, 30% of the world's fertilizer goes through the Strait of Hormuz. Cost of producing food is going up. I mean, so cost of everything is going up. And as the cost of one thing goes up, the cost of, you know, more things goes up because everyone needs to pass that cost on. So one way or another, everything's getting more expensive. Fuel, materials, soon it'll be labor. And as a result, like, you know, if you're not passing that on to your clients, really it's just your margin disappearing, right?
Absolutely. Second thing comes to mind is just around people paying. So, you know, people have less money in the world when these sorts of things happen. And so no matter who you deal with, whether it's builders or homeowners or, you know, anyone really, like, people are starting to hold on to their money. And you can see that. You can see it in the news. I see it by talking to clients here on the program. And, man, you got to have your terms tied, eh? So if you don't do anything about this, like, you'll suffer that cash. And cash is king, as we know, right? So
absolutely.
That's massively important. Third one is around just the workflow. So just that pipeline, if you don't do anything about this, there's a chance your work can dry up. Maybe gaps in the schedule is the first part, and then just nothing as you normally have it, you know, however long your pipeline normally is.
People don't have the same amount of expendable income, right? Like, no. Anything that's not a necessity starts to get put on the back burner when you don't have the money to pay for it. So, yeah, unfortunately, that does lead to workflow issues.
That's right. I guess ultimately, man, you kind of feel the pressure of the recession. Your business suffers by it. If you're sitting there on your hands, and you're not doing anything about it, you don't look at this strategically and think, like, what can I do? You kind of fall victim to what's going on in the economy. You're not sort of creating your own economy and being Kevin Bigger in your analogy, right?
Yeah, 100%. Whereas on the other side, I think there are some critical levers we're going to talk about today. Yeah. And if you pull those, there's actually some really big opportunities out of this.
Yeah, massive. Look, the first one is you protect your profit. So you are really aware of the numbers and you pass it on in a really strategic way. The second one is, obviously, if you have your terms sorted and you're really thinking about cash flow, you can have healthy cash flow through this whole thing that's going on in the world at the moment. Pipeline, strong. If you really focus on this and get it right, you pull those levers, you'll have a full pipeline. There is work out there. There will still be work out there.
Well, that's the beauty of trades businesses. There's always work there. Yeah. It just kind of changes, you know, with the economic climate as to what types of work are available. And if you're proactive about this, you could be one of the few businesses that actually stays really busy and in a profitable way as well.
Absolutely. Look, I guess the last one is you live in your own economy, right? Like, no matter what's happening, you're in control. And whether it's Kevin Bigger scenario where you're 10Ks back but you still win by 40Ks, or it's not as bad, like you said, and people don't feel it as hard as what, you know, people are sort of making it out to be, and you just get leaps and bounds ahead, you're still winning in that scenario, right? You're not falling victim to the world, the weather, the whatever's going on, right?
Yeah. So, yeah. Well, I remember Warren Buffett used to say, when everybody zigs, you should zag.
Yeah.
So I think the hard thing is, you know, a lot of the time if we pay too much attention to what's happening in the economy, we don't put the attention into creating our own economy and actually, you know, taking the right actions that are gonna work for your business anyway. And I think that's the key, is you can really shift that from being a victim of circumstance to, you know, being someone that's in control. Mm. And it's actually quite simple to do. So that's what we're gonna tuck into today. So should be good, but we got five key action points. I think the first one I wanna start with is adjusting your prices daily. I mean, I think it's something that people do periodically. If you're following best practice, you'll be adjusting your prices from time to time. But in a time like this, like, we're talking daily. So where do we start with that?
The first part of this is actually knowing what's going on. So I got a question for you.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know when your suppliers last updated their prices?
Oh, well, maybe we do, maybe we don't. I mean, like, I think that's the key, right? Is, like, we're not often finger on the pulse with that. Like, yeah. We might get an updated price list from the merchant every now and then. Man, if we're really onto it, like, maybe you've actually got an API set up where you got live pricing coming through to your field management software. If you've got that, then that's awesome, because it means you're pricing off of the current price of materials. If you're not doing that, then the hard part is that you might be pricing based on what you think materials cost, and then you actually go to purchase those materials and they cost more than what you priced. And that's a real problem. Like, we had a client recently who quoted a job, quote got accepted, they were stoked, and then they went to buy the materials and they realized that the revenue on that job was what the materials cost.
Oh, that's a kick in the guts, eh?
Yeah, so they were in real trouble. And, you know, they obviously, we'll talk about that in a bit more detail, but I think the key with this is you need that live pricing of what you're going to use, of your materials, your fuel, your labor, or otherwise you just can't price effectively. You can't, you know, factor in a margin. So
yeah,
I think that's critical.
You got to look back at your targets too, right? Because if you don't know your targets and you're listening to this, like, that's a great step to start with, right? Because you'll have, if you go and look at our work type that you do, like a benchmark for what you're currently pricing at and what you're currently, you know, actually doing the work at. So if you look at a type of work and it's 40% all the time, even just taking that target and just factoring in the changes to material costs, the changes to fuel costs, and ensuring that you still get the 40%, that's a great place to start, right?
Yeah.
So making sure you have your targets, making sure you're getting all the details of any changes to costs and passing those on, that's that's massively important. And think about where different costs are actually going to the work. So, you know, if you're running diggers or tip trucks, this is going to have a pretty massive impact with the fuel just in itself. Know what prices are changing with your materials. And then you mentioned this before, but labor as well. Everything's getting more expensive with this. And so
everything's going up.
Yeah.
Next thing, you guys are going to be wanting more money. If you're paying guys more, you need to be on charging that to the client. It's really important. I think during a time like this, it's so easy to think, man, I can't possibly charge more for what I'm doing because, like, look at what everything costs. Like, people don't have any more money. Reality is, though, if you don't, you're just going to end up doing a whole bunch of work for free or worse. And you can't do that. Like, you can't sustain that. And there's no reason that this should be only your problem. Like, everything is getting more expensive because everything is getting more expensive. You are no different. You need to also be more expensive. And will that put some pressure on people's ability to pay you? Sure. But that's why we get into point number two, which is to target your marketing.
Can we just, before we move on to point number two, can we just talk to how you deal with people, either if you've got a locked in job and you notice something like you just mentioned where the costs are the revenue, or you just have like a lot of work in the pipeline. You know, some people listening, probably 3-6 months of work in the pipeline at old prices, with old costs.
This is huge. I think the thing is as well is like when you have a quote that you've put out or a bid and that's been accepted, you know, like this is a binding document. And so we feel like we can't go back to that client and say, hey, you know, this is not going to work anymore. I can't do the job at that price. Now, while it is true that this is a binding document, there is nothing stopping you from having that conversation. And at the end of the day, if you really cannot do the job at that price, then like you need to find a way out of this. And there's always a way out, always.
Yeah.
And I think the thing is having that conversation often goes a lot better than you think. I remember a client a while ago, name was Mark. Now, he came into the business, I won't give away all his details, but basically Mark came in, we started working with him, and one of his problems was he realized he was underpricing all of his work when we started digging into his numbers. And the real problem was Mark had 8 months worth of forward work booked when he started. He's like, well, I can't do anything about this because all those quotes are already accepted. And I just remember saying to him, I was like, Mark, go to each and every one of those clients and say, I can't do that price. I'm really, really sorry. I've underquoted the work. And if I do that, I'll go bust. And, you know, if they have any problem with that, then just remind them that if I go bust, all of the guarantees and everything that I've put on these jobs are void because I won't be here. So if do you want it, like, protected and you know, actually guaranteed, or do you want me to be gone? You know, also possibility that this is 8 months worth of work, and in 4 months, I won't be able to do the fifth month anyway. So that quote will be void anyway. So, hey, look, either it's going to have to change to this price or I'm not doing the work. He, do you know how much work said no and actually didn't accept his new price?
I think it was like none of it, wasn't it?
None, not one of them, right? Like, and I think because the reality is like even when he started pricing for the right amount of profit, like people still wanted those jobs done.
Yeah.
And it was still a reasonable price. It's just he'd miscalculated off the first instance. And so if that happens to you, you know, one thing that's really up people's sleeve at the moment that wasn't actually up Mark's sleeve is you have a really understandable reason to explain why this has happened.
Yeah.
And it's like, hey, I know you've accepted this quite a while ago, but unfortunately, things have changed. You've probably noticed. Fuel is way more expensive. Materials are way more expensive. I literally cannot honor that quote anymore. It's going to have to be this new price, or otherwise I can't do the job. It's just, it's not only unprofitable, it's like, this will destroy my business. So, really sorry, but, you know, we're going to have to change.
Yeah,
they might take it, they might not, but you can't go ahead with jobs that are going to lose you money.
Yeah.
You know, not when you know that in advance.
Absolutely. And probably one recommendation is just avoid doing that stuff by email as much as you can. If you have a massive database and lots of repeatable work, sure, send a couple of emails. But like any key clients, any big jobs, try to get there in person if you can. And like worst case, like pick up the phone and give them a call. It's a lot better.
Yeah. They've got to understand and you've got to have a proper talk about this. But yeah. Like I said, this really leads to point number two, because when you are adjusting your prices, I mean, let's just be honest. What we're talking about is you're going to be more expensive than you were.
Yeah.
Now, at a time when people have less money and you're becoming more expensive, you might lose some work. But there are two types of work that never, ever dry up, ever.
Yeah.
Number one is emergency maintenance work, emergency service work. When there's something that goes wrong in my house or my business, I'm going to fix it. If my toilet is overflowing, I'm going to get a plumber around. If my power goes out, I'm going to get an electrician around. Like, this kind of stuff doesn't stop. The difference between a third world country and a first world country is power and water. That's it. So, I mean, if you don't have those things, you are in trouble. So end of the day, emergency maintenance work doesn't stop. The other one is marketing to the affluent. People that have money, people that are, you know, pretty well off, generally will not stop doing things just because the economy is in a worse spot. You know, people that are in a lower socioeconomic situation or somewhere towards the middle, they might struggle a bit, and some of that work will dry up. But that higher, you know, like top tier client, the ones that have a bit more money, it's not going to stop for them. In fact, they might even smell an opportunity for a bargain because, let's be honest, they have the money anyway. It's not a problem. And so it's a really good time for them to get something done. So I think that the big thing is if you can target those two markets, you know, those won't be finished. They won't stop, and you can really keep your pipeline full. So maybe let's talk about how to get emergency maintenance work, because if you're not already targeting this, the question on everyone's lips is going to be, how do I get that?
Yeah, sure. I guess the first thing you've got to do is figure out what you're going to do. Like, what's the work that you're going to do? You probably have a pretty good idea of it based on what your experience is and the types of jobs that you've done before. But really, this is about speed. Like, what's important to somebody who's got a leaking toilet, right? It's getting in and getting the job done fast. And where are they going to go? They're going to go to Google, right? That's where I'd go. That's where you'd go.
100%. I mean, even if I've got someone top of mind that I've used before,
yeah,
even if, you know, I've got a fridge magnet, even if I've got whatever, like, you know, I've seen Facebook ads for a company, like, all of that goes out the window in the heat of the moment while my toilet's overflowing. I'm going to knee-jerk react, pull my phone out, go to Google, and, yeah, you know, look for the closest plumber. That's, like, that's what's going
to
happen.
Yeah, you need to be at the top of Google, though. This is not about trying to go to your marketing agency and play the long game of trying to get ranked higher and higher. This is about just paying to be at the top.
So SEO, no, that's not what we're talking about. Like, doing SEO, it could take months, months and months to get to rank to the highest, you know, SEO spot, and you're still going to come up underneath everyone who's paying for the Google ads on that search term. So we're talking Google ads here. That's what's going to cut through. You know, months and months of SEO, this could all have blown over by then. So you need to be, you know, paying for those Google ads is really the key to get to the top. But it's not where it ends, right?
It's definitely not where it ends. You need a really strong landing page. So real quick summary, somebody types into Google, you come up on their essentially the search page. And if you're at the top, it'll come up with your headline. The headline needs to be attractive. That's a start. So if it's somebody who's got a leaking toilet, they want to know that you can be there in 15 minutes, an hour, like really quick, right? Because otherwise there's toilet
service,
water everywhere.
Two-hour turnaround, like things like that that you can write for emergency maintenance are really attractive for the headline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the landing pages. Yeah, it's really important. So, like, having a super solid landing page that advertises you can get there quickly, that's number one. Has social proof and proves that you're somebody who, like, does this stuff reliably, that's number two. It makes it really, really easy for them to either call you straight away or book online or get you to give them a call. Like, that all needs to be right front and center without them even having to scroll. Like, that's really important to get right so that they just call you. They don't think about going to another plumber or another electrician or another landscaper or whatever.
Yeah, it should never be a mystery novel how to get in touch with you. Yeah. And unfortunately, when we look at a lot of landing pages, it's like, call today, no link, no phone number. You've like search your way through the website to find any contact details.
Yeah.
It's unclear what they even do. There's no social proof. The website's a mess. It was built in, like, you know, before the internet somehow.
Mm.
But, you know, like, it's terrible. So, like, you've got to have a really great landing page. It's got to, you know, great copy on it, great, you know, great CTAs or call to actions. It's got to be very, very obvious how to get in touch with you. And I think if we can do all of that, then we're going to get inquiries. But then that's not where it stops, because we need to handle those inquiries right.
Yeah, massive. So, one, you should have somebody dedicated to taking the phone call, because if people are calling you and you're up in an attic trying to manage the phone calls, it's not going to work very well, right? They're not going to be able to hear you. You're not going to be able to record the information. It's just going to be a shit experience.
And you won't do
honest.
A good job of selling the work.
Nah.
Like, you know, and unfortunately, like, someone's got an emergency on their hands. Like, they want to talk about it. They want help now from someone who's coherent, clear, and someone who's, you know, sounding like they're in control. And so you need someone dedicated to this, and they ideally need to follow a script.
They should be.
You know, something we work on with our clients is a really solid inquiry script that will convert those inquiries into jobs on the spot. So that's important, but also capacity.
Yeah. So having open schedules or schedules that are a bit flexible for your team, and having the right people ready to go so they can actually get there within a 2-hour window or a 1-hour window is massive, right?
Yeah, for sure. Again, my toilet's overflowing, my power's off. being told, hey, mate, we'll be there in 2 days, I'm like, no, no, this is not going to work.
I'm calling somebody else.
Yeah, right. And so I think the really hard thing with this is, unfortunately, like we said, is a lot of companies out there are going to be slashing their workforce because they're like, well, workflow's drying up. But actually, the only way you can target the only work that's guaranteed to be there is to have the capacity to do that at the drop of a hat. And so I think the key with this is that the minute you start cutting your team right back to bare bones, you actually can't target this work anyway, and you seal the fate of that lower workflow. So, you know, you do need to have the capacity on the tools or in the field to, you know, to work very quickly and get onto these jobs. So that's emergency maintenance. Biggest thing you can pull is Google Ads to good landing pages, good inquiry process with a dedicated person, and capacity to do the jobs quickly.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the affluent.
Yeah, so what's important to the affluent? It's quality. It's really, really solid service, and it's being able to get the job done without them having to worry about it, right? Like, that's important to the affluent. They just want you to come and do an awesome job, and their problem's solved.
Yeah.
That's what they want.
And once again, speed. Like, if we think about someone who's, you know, who's got a bit more money, they're usually someone who's used to being important. And so you need to make them feel important. Like, that's number one. That's where the service comes in. They're also used to getting their way and fast, which means that if you're slow, you're slow to respond, you're slow to get the job done, you're slow to quote the work, you're slow to get them a price, you're slow on anything, they start to become very frustrated very quickly. They're not used to it. They don't like it. Next thing is, you need to be really high quality. They're going to think to themselves, you know what, I'm paying for this. I'm paying probably more than anyone else to get top quality work done, so you need to live up to that. Now, obviously, it's difficult to show that during marketing and sales, right? Like, you haven't, you know, if you've done the job for them already, you can show the quality, but until you've done the job, you can't show the quality. So ways you can show that is, again, with social proof, testimonials, case studies, you know, examples of work that you've done, things like that. These are very powerful to the affluent because they want to see proof that you can deliver to the standard they have in mind.
A good flowchart or description of how you work with them as well, that can build a lot of confidence to just show that it's actually quite hands-off for them, and you'll just get it done to their specs, right?
And that you're completely under control.
Yeah.
That none of this is going to blow back on them. Nothing's going to be a hassle. There won't be delays. This is going to be easy for them, because, you know, one thing again the affluent are used to is being able to pay for ease.
Yep.
You know, and usually when you're paying more for something, what you're actually paying for is speed and ease. That's where the extra money comes in. Quality, I mean, it's a given. I doubt there's anybody listening that's going to honestly say, you know what, I don't really do quality work. You know, like, I'm pretty sure everyone thinks they do quality work. Now, obviously, some's better than others, and you really want to make sure that you go over and above for the affluent, because otherwise it's not going to work. You can't charge the big bucks.
Yeah.
But more importantly is speed and ease for them is actually a big part of what they're paying for. So you need to be able to facilitate that. And again, great customer service. You need to treat them like they're important.
That first impression is so important in this market. Like, they've obviously seen you, and the first impression is anything marketing related. So your website, the landing page, or whatever they're looking at. That first call where they call you or they email you, that response and how you deal with that shows your professionalism, and it really ties into what you're talking about.
That's right. So that's how we target the high-end work, which really brings us to point number three, which is to adjust your terms.
Yeah, so this is a massively important one. There's a few points here. Look, the first one is, like, where you can take deposits as much as you can. Like, take payment as fast as humanly possible. Now, with a project, if you can take a deposit, use that deposit to be able to acquire the materials to do the jobs. We just talked about, like, pricing updates daily before. And so if you can sell a job, get the deposit for it, acquire all the materials at the current cost, there's zero risk for you in anything like that going up. Obviously, fuel is a bit of a factor there depending on when you start the job, but making sure that, like, in the sales process and in your job process, you're taking that money up front, it reduces risk, and it also qualifies out shitty payers as well, like people that are going to be really annoying down the road. And it's harder for everybody anyway at the moment. There's more risk of people not paying, so the better you go with that, the more likely you are to just get paid on time.
Well, not to mention, like, honestly, I think usually it might be hard in your industry or with your client type, you know, to ask for a deposit. Maybe it's not the done thing. You know, it's never going to be easier than now to push this. I mean, this is something we saw during COVID as well, right? Like, people saying, oh, I can't get deposits for the work that I do. And then at the time, materials were scarce. It was hard to get your hands on some things. And so we said to them, well, hey, look, materials are going up in cost. It's hard to get our hands on stuff. So you need to pay basically 50, 40% deposit sometimes so that I can buy the materials now and we can actually lock in the start date of this project at that price. If you can't can't do that and you can't pay the deposit, that's totally fine. It just means that this entire price is subject to change up until the start date when I actually buy the materials. So at that point, we'll have an adjusted quote that you'll need to re-accept. So yeah. What do you want to do? Do you want to lock in this price or not? And most people are like, no, I'll lock in the price. You have exactly the same situation now. So I think like a few parts to this. Number one is your quotes need to have their terms adjusted. Like if you have a quote acceptance or validity time frame, it can't be more than 7 days in this market. It just can't. I mean, honestly, even if it was shorter, would be better. And you know, if people think, you know, you could even do 3 days. Let's say you did a 3-day quote validity. People can say, "Man, 3 days. So I've got to make a decision that quick." And you go, "No, you don't. You don't." But if it like goes longer than 3 days, then I'll have to requote the job. You know, you may be aware, but there's a lot going on in the world. Material prices are going up. Fuel costs are going up. So this price is based on the way that costs look now. In a few days' time, honestly, they're going to look different and I'm going to have to requote the work. So this quote's available for 3 days. I mean, honestly, you could do 7 is probably okay. Any longer than that, I think is madness. You know, you're just going to not make any money on that work. So
yeah.
Then what happens is you also let them know deposit will be taken in advance to cover the materials. What we'll do is we'll buy those materials immediately, which means that we have the materials and we're ready to get started on start date and we've locked in the price that we've committed to. So if you want the security around your job for the price and the start date, you know, you're going to have to accept this quote within at least 7 days and you're going to have to pay a deposit of X amount.
Yeah. And then at the back end, it's shorter payment terms too, right?
Yeah.
Like you can't have 30 or 60 day payment terms. Like send the invoice. What's the smallest amount of time that you can get that?
Yeah.
So can you get it in 7 days? Anyone that you're dealing with that is a consumer, like get the money on the day.
Yeah, payment like, on completion.
Yeah,
it has to be. For consumers, you know, but yeah. Homeowners and the likes. And again, for service and maintenance work, especially that emergency stuff, like, man, you can get payment on completion for pretty much most of it. Again, there'll be people out here thinking, I can't change my payment terms. They are what they are. And I'm like, they are what they are in normal circumstances. This is probably up for negotiation in the current climate. So
yeah.
I think this is really important for you to address. And hey, look, you might not win them all. Maybe not everything can be adjusted, but everything you can adjust is going to ease this problem.
Yeah.
You know, normally, if it goes 30 days before the person has to pay, probably that person's economic situation is not going to change, you know, and they're going to pay the bill. 30 days from now, your client could be in a very, very different economic situation and actually not be able to pay. And so you really need to shorten that time because it shortens your risk window.
I think that's the main things that you can sort of like look at in terms of your terms. It's actually really important to run a solid AR process, like accounts receivable process as well. Like any delinquent payers, like you need to be calling them straight away. Don't just sit there and email them. Like make sure you're on them.
Yeah, 100%. Which brings me to point number 4. And this one's an easy one, but just stay informed. Like I think there's a lot of information out there that you can usually get and you normally might look at, but you just might not look at it that often.
It's not just material prices, but also like how much is available and how much is forecasted to be available. Like talking to your suppliers about that too, just so you can, you know, buy in bulk, negotiate with them if you want to buy in bulk as well. Like if you've got a bit more buying power there, that can actually help back with your margins as well.
Yeah, well, that's crucial. I remember during COVID and, you know, plasterboard became just, it was as scarce as hen's teeth.
Like gold.
You just couldn't find it. Like, so, I mean, you couldn't get it. And as a result, like a lot of projects died off, but there were some people who had noticed that earlier and they bought up a ton of plasterboard. And as a result, they were fine. But you know, again, like this is stuff you can usually find out if you go looking. But unfortunately, most people don't look. So don't be most people. Go and look.
Yeah, go look, out. Call them, whatever. You were talking about gas prices before at your place compared to in town.
Dude, like, so, I mean, here where I live, there's an app that you get on your phone. It's called Gas Spy. And, I mean, there's apps like this all around the world.
Yeah.
That's just what the one around here is called. But you go on and it tells you of all the gas stations in your area who's doing the cheapest gas on any given day. And, I mean, like, we had gas in Tarapa, which is just up the road from where we are today in the studio. And they were doing, you know, unleaded for $3.13 a litre. Now, the gas station by my house was doing
$3.65. Oh!
Yeah, so, I mean, like, we're talking about 50 cents a litre difference in gas on that day, and it was a one-day special up the road. But hey, look, if you've got an entire fleet to fill up, you know, it would be madness not to take advantage of that. And so normally I would never use this app. It's not, you know, it's not a wild amount of difference. I'm not driving across town for less than a cent difference in gas. But at the moment, man, like staying informed with petrol prices, like what is fuel cost from different outlets around your town? Like, keep on the money with it.
Yeah, it seems like a basic thing, but it's actually your team, because if they're going and using a fuel card, all you have to do is simple instruction, go to this one today. It's 20 cents cheaper. It's 50 cents. 50 cents is crazy.
So. Otherwise, they'll just pull into the wherever's closest, and unfortunately, there's so much variability at the moment, so you need to stay on the money with it.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, just like keeping up with current events, like there's a lot that's changing at the moment, and unfortunately, we're not going to release a podcast on this every week. So I mean, like, I think just doing your own research and just staying up to date with how things are going, you know, over in the Middle East, and whether or not, you know, fuel prices are going up, going down, material prices are going up, going down, but also what's happening next. I think there's quite a lot of really good commentary you can tap into there, which, you know, helps you to read the tea leaves, so to speak, and stay ahead of the curve for things that are changing. So I think staying informed is pretty critical, which brings us to point number five.
All right, so we're going to talk about controlling the controllables. All right, so look, it's so easy to look at news, to look at everything and just be like, woe is me, I can't do anything about this. But like, the reality is there's two economies going on. There's that economy, which is what's happening that you can't control. Like, I can't control, you can't control the oil price. No. I can't control, you can't control what's happening in the Strait and whether boats are being allowed to go through there. Like, we can't do any, we can't influence that, we can't control it, right? It is just happening. And so there's that economy, and then there's your economy. So your economy is where you control the actions. So it's the terms that you set, it's the prices that you commit to and that you put out to your clients, it's the processes that your team follow when they answer the phone. It's all the stuff that you can decide on so that you can, you know, target the right market, so that you can price, so that you still make profit, so that you can create terms and follow processes that you can still get cash in. And if your headspace is on what you can control, you'll be in a way better mental state for whatever's going on in the world, because the reality is we don't know. And we just have to take the information that we can and then use that to make a really solid decision, and then go to our team and tell them what the decision is, and then just back the decision until you make another decision.
Yeah, well, I think you hit the nail on the head there about it's a mindset, really. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, obviously we've talked so far, the first four points are more like tactical levers. This fifth point is a mindset piece. If you're trying to give all of your energy and thought towards stuff that you can do nothing about, then unfortunately you just become a victim.
Yeah.
And you just end up getting buried, really, and it becomes overwhelming, and you just think there's nothing I can do. And so you batten down the hatches, you throw out that sea anchor, and, you know, next thing you're 40Ks back. So I think the key with this is there's always stuff you can do. You can always adapt to the environment. You can adapt to the things that are happening in the economy. You can adapt to what's happening day to day. And you can take control of actions that you can influence. Situations like this actually create is just it's a more unforgiving environment. And it just means you have to be a lot more aware of what you can do, and then actually taking the action that you can take. And I think if you do that and you adopt that mindset and you do everything that you can do that is within your power, then honestly, no one else will. Mm. And so you can't lose, because you'll be the only one who's really, really taking any action. So it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, fully agree, man.
All right, well, let's land this plane. So, I mean, yeah, a lot of stuff going on in the world at the moment. We understand it's hard. You know, there's pressure on your margins, there's pressure on your workflow, there's pressure on your payment, and unfortunately, this can lead to a lot of disastrous effects in business, but it does not have to be that way. By controlling what you can control, pulling these five levers, you not only survive through a time like this, but you thrive as well. So thanks heaps for listening. We'll catch you all again next time.
Congratulations on being part of a select group of savvy business owners who are taking their businesses to the next level. And to help you on your journey, don't forget to check out our show notes for a copy of our free book, The Profitable Tradie, and other valuable resources. Thanks for being a part of this special group, and we'll see you in the next episode of the Profitable Tradie podcast.